We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always, over there in beautiful New York City, my man, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Ty, I'm terrific. And I'm told, a little birdie told me that you have extensive thoughts on this Quick Lane Bowl matchup.
I do.
So I guess the floor is yours.
I do. No, we'll get into that when we get to the bowl matchups a little bit later. Okay. So just to peel back the curtain, normally we record this recap show about 9:30 Eastern time on a Sunday morning, but because of the playoff announcements, because of the bowl announcements that are still coming out as we're doing this show, we decided to record at 4 Eastern so that we had a more complete set of data to present to our Verballers. Is that right?
Correct. Yes, that is true. We could have recorded this morning and just talked about the conference championship games and any updated coaching stuff. But you know what? It didn't feel right to cheat everybody of our strong bowl thoughts.
That's correct.
The playoff rankings that became pretty, not the rankings, but in terms of the four teams who would make the playoff, pretty obvious after all was said and done yesterday as we record this Sunday. It's important to date this, by the way.
Yeah.
So if something crazy happens Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern, we wanted to give you the full scope, as full as we could give.
Absolutely. So as we are recording this show, we're going to save some of the bowl announcements for the very end if we can. Hopefully, we'll get a full palette here in front of
us. Shout out to everybody waiting to see the bowl matchups.
Right,
and
right.
Hear them on this show specifically.
If you're hearing them them for the first time on our show, we will do our best to present them in their entirety, at least as it becomes available to us, probably by the latter stages of this show. But hello.
Hey.
Welcome. We made it through the college football season, if you can believe that. There still is the Army-Navy game next week, which we'll talk a little bit about at some point in time, but for the interim, we've got all of our conference championship games in the books. We're going to go through all of those. We're going to play your reverbs here momentarily. Don't forget, if you haven't already subscribed, you can do so by going on out to solidverbal.com and clicking on any of the subscribe buttons or whatever podcasting app you prefer. You can subscribe to the show. We are available, I believe, on just about all of them by now. It would be awesome if you subscribe because we've got a bunch of bowl content that we're going to present. We've also got a bunch of off-season stuff that we do each and every off-season.
Yes.
The long slog towards the next regular season starts in effect around now. So make sure you are subscribed, not just to the podcast feed, but also to all of our social channels, as well as the subreddit at solidverbal.reddit.com.
Solidverbal.reddit.com is correct. And if you want to get a sense, if you're new to the season, or new to the show, a lot of our off-season content is dedicated to Q&As in which Ty says things like, Dan, I got to tell you, I've never heard of a pineapple, Dan, that sounds kind of made up to me. So stick around for that.
All right. Why don't we start where we have started all year?
Let's.
Many folks dialed into our reverb line at 408 Verbal One. They also sent in voice memos to thereverbline@gmail.com. And our boy Ryan, who's been cutting these up for us most of this season, did an admirable job. Let's have a listen.
The lady throwing overhanded and the Dr. Pepper toss won. That's awesome.
Hey, this is Chris calling from Waco, Texas.
Daniel from Oklahoma here calling.
Hello, Ty and Dan. This is Sean from Seattle.
Hey, this is Dylan from calling from Baton Rouge.
Hi, this is Hayden in Notre Dame, Indiana.
Hey, this is Amy from Portland, and I'm married to a man from Oklahoma, and all I gotta say is, okay, boomers, go Ducks.
So it's halftime of the Pac-12 championship game, and my Utes, well, I'm researching airfare to San Antonio.
Hi, this is Phil from Salt Lake, and God, the pain hurts. So I tried to put my emotions down to paper, and I wrote a poem. I had a football team called the Utes. They died. They died. It looked like our offense was sleeping. I cried. I cried. Go Utes. God, this hurts.
Utah's uniforms were clean as hell, but they certainly did not play that way. They're going to need some extra serotonin to get over this championship Saturday.
Hey, Dan and Ty. To Alex, calling from Santa Clara after the Pac-12 championship game. Is Arizona State the best team in the Pac-12? Just kidding. Oregon wins. Go Ducks.
Do you smell that? It's the fresh aroma of roses. We took the pack. Go Ducks.
Ty, Dan, do you smell that? Is that
roses? Go Ducks. All of the Bears down in Waco loved Christmas a lot. But Alex Grinch, who lived just north of Waco, did not!
I witnessed my Baylor Bears almost beat the perennial powerhouse of the Oklahoma Sooners with a third-string scout team quarterback and Jalen Hurts giving two terrible turnovers. But now we shall see.
This is David from Columbus calling to say I am emotionally and physically exhausted after the most stressful 14-point conference championship win I've ever watched. Let's hope the Bucks remember how to play the first 30 minutes of a football game, and hopefully we can beat up on some Tigers. Go Bucks.
Hi, this is Hayden in Notre Dame, Indiana, watching as my team doesn't have a conference championship game, just like Alabama. Go Irish.
Hey, y'all. I've been a lifelong SEC fan. Looks like our defense is getting pretty offensive. I mean, everybody that I was talking about had great defense power in the SEC. And I was talking this team, but clearly this year.
It's Sunday morning in Athens, Georgia, and the sun did rise only to shed more light on the fact that Jake Fromm does not at all have any bit of Baker Mayfield in it.
It's not a good run for Georgia when you have more players injured than points scored in the SEC championship game.
I feel like the Georgia athletic staff is just going to trudge out like a World War II doctor at this point with a cigarette in one hand saying, oh, it doesn't look like you're going to have too good of a time, but what about those Notre Dame Fighting Irish, huh?
Dan, Ty, how about them Tigers?
How about the Hawaiian slow roasting, ladies and gentlemen? The Broncos are back.
Guess who's back? Back again. Lane Kiffin's back. Tell a friend.
All right.
My friend is a Tennessee fan.
There you go.
There.
There you go. Thank you. To one and all for calling all season long. It was a ton of fun. Again, thanks to our boy Ryan for cutting those up. And thanks to all the Verballers, the hundreds, if not thousands of people who called in throughout the course of the last 15 weeks. It's been a ton of fun to listen and relive some of these college football moments with you. So, Daniel.
Yes, Captain Ty.
Thank you. By the way, did you catch Gus Johnson going all Captain Jack on Jack Cohn?
Of course I did. Ty.
Captain Jack.
The Twos Cruise is permeating the college football landscape, whether you like it or not. It's all very real.
We're going to walk back through the weekend in chronological order. It's okay. A quasi-oral history, if you will. It was the best way I could think to do it. But
okay.
Let's start.
Just counting on each other to tell
correct.
The tale.
That's correct.
Okay.
sitting around the campfire here.
Sure.
The day after.
Mm-hmm.
We framed this weekend out as sort of the and one scenario. Like, there were three teams that we knew were on an elite level. And then there was that one more spot left in the playoffs that the committee would have to fill.
Yeah.
And we didn't really know what would happen. We had a few options that we presented. It could have gotten crazy. It didn't. And alas, it was pretty obvious in the end. But first up to try and claim that spot was the Utah Utes in the Pac-12 game on Friday night. Coming into this, they were ranked fifth. In hindsight, they got to be sick because I think a win would have almost definitely put them through into the playoff. But not meant to be, Dan. Your Oregon Ducks, your defending Red Box Bowl champion, Oregon Ducks.
Yeah.
They're now Pac-12 champions.
Where's my hat?
As well. They win by a 37-15 score. Walk me through this, Dan.
How did it feel? May I just say I am supremely disappointed that when you said it had an and one flair to it, that you were not talking about Skip to My Lou and the Professor and
No. I thought about that.
Oh, baby.
No.
Baby Shaq. Who else do we? Oh, God. I'm forgetting all my guys here. But my reaction to Utah, Oregon, as somebody who was pretty confident in watching both of these teams for a good chunk of time and knowing that Oregon had the higher ceiling because they just have the, I think, higher collection, the better collection of talent, but Utah just had fewer questions like we talked about. I was somewhat surprised by Oregon coming out the way they did, but I suppose it shouldn't have been that much of a surprise because we saw them play up or sometimes down to their opponents all year long. We saw the defense look rocking against Auburn and USC and not necessarily against Washington, but they came to play against Washington. They came away, especially away from Autzen, with some pretty big wins or performances. I'm not going to talk about the end of the Auburn game. Mm. So what they look like almost immediately against Utah was both familiar and surprising all at the same time. So I came away with the offensive line just completely pulverized Utah up front, which nobody's really done this year.
No.
Justin Herbert, first of all, keeping the ball on runs early to actually run the pistol as intended, because you're supposed to have at least a threat of a quarterback running, and that's not anything Oregon and Herbert offered leading up to this game. So that was a new but expected wrinkle if you're running a pistol offense. And then Oregon's defense just completely swarming Utah and coming up with big stop after big stop on third and short and fourth and short. And it's something we've talked about across the sport, winning moments. We saw it across every one of these huge championship games, conference championship games. Oregon won moments, whether it was, you know, batting down passes on, or just third and short, fourth and short, Brady Breeze coming up and leveling a runner or picking off that pass in the end zone. Oregon just came to win the moments. And Kayvon Thibodeau was terrific, blocking a punt, chasing down Tyler Huntley. Utah, it looked like the moment was just too big for Utah, who had a seriously very, very good season. But the best of Oregon came to play, and Utah was just, they weren't on the same field.
So now, hold on. You say the moment was too big for Utah. And that may have been true early, but there was a moment in this game late in the third quarter.
Totally.
Utah came back. They made it an 8-point game, 23-15, with a whole quarter left.
Yes.
Were you having Auburn flashbacks? Because that was a near identical situation to what happened in that game.
Yeah, Oregon ran out to a lead and then made some decisions, poor decisions, didn't get out to any sort of impressive offensive start in the second half. And I was. So that it was. It was a new look Oregon, even though they sort of kept it somewhat conservative at times. Busting out long runs is fine.
Yeah, sure.
Busting out, CJ Verdell goes for over 200 with three touchdowns. I believe he is one of just a handful of running backs since 2000 or something who's done that. And Oregon, when I talk about the moment being too big for Utah, there were specific instances of Utah. I mean, Tyler Huntley made a couple of incredible throws. Zach Moss had a few incredible moments and runs himself. But Utah was held scoreless for three quarters in this game.
Yeah.
And so Utah had a moment in the third quarter where they looked competitive that they were going to come back. But for Oregon to just rise again was, as an Oregon fan, it was pretty incredible to watch them really step up in this moment, because I really do anticipate this being a point of the Mario Cristobal era that is, I think it's base camp. I think Oregon has a higher ceiling with how they're recruiting and what the defense might look like.
Well, to your point, Kyle Whittingham made the same comment about the line of scrimmage. He was disappointed, said they'd been undefeated in that area all year, and he's right. They didn't win the line of scrimmage. I thought the Oregon defense is super impressive. Six sacks of Tyler Huntley, pressure all night. You mentioned Kevin Thibodeau, two and a half sacks. He blocked a punt. Wasn't like a punt block was intentionally called there.
He broke through the line,
got it done. And only the second game this season in which Zach Moss, the record-setting running back for Utah, did not score a touchdown. The other one, USC, they lost that game too. So
right.
The Ducks move on. On to bowl season, I should say. 37-15 is your final. They're going to square off against Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl. So very narrowly missed a solid verbal, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, I believe he got hurt in that USC game. So that's at least defensible. He only had, I think, six carries. He was hurt pretty early.
So with a chance to go to the playoff, Utah falters, which means the Big 12 game. The Big 12 game was high noon on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma 30, Baylor 23 in overtime. So unlike the first game between these two, this one was neck and neck the whole way. Each team won two quarters, so it was actually quite fitting that it went to OT.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this one was there for Baylor with a little better execution.
Sort of.
Not, I don't think to the same extent as the first game.
Right.
To be fair. But they did go to overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with a few more moments of better execution, they could legit be 13-0. It was not meant to be. They finished 11-2. Fair enough.
Great year.
After watching both of these Oklahoma-Baylor games in their entirety, I think it's clear that Oklahoma is the better team. Also clear that they should have been winning these games by more. And the reason they didn't is because of a good opportunistic Baylor defense and an offense that capitalized on Oklahoma mistakes, the whole nine yards. But at this point, I keep coming back to what you said about Jalen Hurts. He is truly an equal opportunity herder, isn't he?
Yeah. Who hurts you? Well, both teams. Jalen Hurts, yeah.
He mostly hurts other teams, and his talent's undeniable, but when he hurts his own team, it really stings. And he did it again in this game, Dan.
Correct. So where do you want to begin with Oklahoma?
Let's start with Oklahoma, yeah.
Yes, the best of Oklahoma is Jalen Hurts, it's CeeDee Lamb, it's how much pressure Oklahoma got up front against this Baylor offensive line, which has been fine, nothing crazy, but this is sort of a different look for Oklahoma. Obviously, Kenneth Murray has been, you know, the strong point of what has been at times a weaker unit this season and in the past few years, so it was nice that everybody sort of gathered around him to rise to or hope to rise to his level. So that was an encouraging sign. Obviously, Oklahoma gifts Baylor a short field for their first touchdown. It was a 20-25 yard short field for the Bears, but that's fine. They took advantage and that counts. It was a nice pass from, is it Jerry Bohannon? I'm pretty sure it's Jerry.
Jerry Bohannon. No, it's Jerry.
It's Jerry, which is a great name. He comes in once Charlie Brewer takes a hit where he looked super wobbly, and it was very clear that he was not okay. So he leaves the game. Jerry Bohannon isn't great, but he makes a couple of plays. He was beat up, and then it was Jacob Zeno?
Yeah, baby.
Who comes in for Baylor, who I think has been sort of pegged as the quarterback of the future, a true freshman who has not seen a lot of action this year to maintain his red shirt. And he comes in, and despite the Oklahoma defense looking very good for this championship game, he found some soft spots in that defense.
Two consecutive passes, 159 yards, and a touchdown.
His first two, yeah.
First two passes. So talk about starting things off on the right foot. I believe he was 3 for 3 passing headed into this football game. So starts his Baylor career a perfect 5 for 5. Interestingly enough, though, to your point on the Oklahoma defense, he did not complete a pass after that. He finished something like 2 for 6. Oklahoma was able to really tighten things up. And as you saw on that final series and then again in overtime, they were bringing pressure. They were not taking it easy on the young freshman. They were bringing pressure and they were forcing him to change his rhythm and, you know, make some quick decisions. Absolutely.
absolutely what you should do. And it almost underscored at the same time that Oklahoma is a running team. The Jalen Hurts throws downfield to CeeDee Lamb are wonderful. These past couple of years with Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray were sensational. But Oklahoma is at its best on the ground, as we've seen, whether it's Samaje Perine or this year Kennedy Brooks and Trey Sermon before he got hurt. And Jalen Hurts, on the ground, has been incredible. They couldn't run against Baylor, and that's what kept it close. They couldn't possess this game. And Baylor came up big after big after big time on defense and stayed in this game. But there's only so much you can do with that much inexperience under center. And they came into this game with some offensive limitations in terms of consistent drives. And I think all credit goes to Oklahoma for playing as complete a game as they possibly could have when things weren't popping necessarily at all times offensively.
Oklahoma ends up being your fourth seed in the playoffs by virtue of this win. The Wisconsin thing didn't happen. We'll get to that game momentarily here. It was interesting for at least a half. But Oklahoma is the one that prevails here. They are going to square off against LSU, which we'll talk about next. I believe I saw that the point spread now has goosed all the way up to 11 or 12 points in favor of LSU, which does not surprise me one iota.
Can we use the word goose now moving forward for the way lines move? This one's goosing down all the way to 3. I love
it. Did I say goosed? I used goose as a verb.
You did. You're like, this one goosed all the way up to 10 or 11. I was like, I don't know what that means.
Don't know how that happened.
I'm in.
Oklahoma, congratulations. They're going to the playoff. And on the Baylor side, congratulations to them on a great year. They're going to the Sugar Bowl to square off against Georgia. It is their first trip to the Sugar Bowl since, I believe, the heyday of 1957, if memory serves.
Wow. Okay, cool.
So good on them. Good season. Yeah. Fun game. Was not meant to be. As Matt Rhule said, I want you guys to feel the pain. Feel the pain and use that in the offseason to drive you.
Yeah.
In the SEC title game, we had LSU 37, Georgia 10, Dan. So the great part about championship week for everyone, and especially for us, is that you can watch all the games from start to finish. Yes. Normally, we're leafing through box scores, we're reading game caps, trying to piece things together after the fact as best we can, because we can't watch
scrubbing through quickly, yeah,
all these games in the morning before we record. I actually could watch this game. I didn't just jot down stats and things that jumped out at me. I jotted down what I was feeling as a man.
Whoa, okay.
How this game, because it's an emotional sport.
It is.
We try to tap into the passion here on the Solid Verbal.
What did you feel?
First off, I didn't feel for one second like Georgia had a shot.
Okay.
And I know I picked them. I got a little crazy, 28-27 in the preview, but whatever. That went out the window on LSU's opening drive when Joe Burrow went 4 of 5 passing. He threw a touchdown. He was calm, cool, and collected. I knew then this Georgia defense, straight up elite. They're good. They're great. Maybe they'll force some plays the rest of the way, but they weren't stopping LSU, and LSU shredded them. Absolutely shredded them. Joe Burrow had 4 touchdowns, almost 350 passing. He's going to win the Heisman. He's going to get picked by the Bengals and go back home to Ohio. It's been a remarkable year for him, and it just keeps going.
All correct.
Secondly,
yeah,
this LSU defense was something, huh?
Yeah, well, any team that can claim Derek Stingley as one of their own, pretty good spot to be in.
Georgia couldn't run at all. It was basically all on Jake Fromm, who was thrown to a bunch of backups, to be fair. But
yeah,
he also missed a bunch of throws. The defense, though, for LSU, that was the thing that, as we sat here all year trying to split hairs, trying to find the weak spots, that was the most obvious thing. And I'm not going to pretend that this is a high-powered Georgia offense. It's not. But still, a total shutdown like this is why LSU got that number one seed.
They played, and this is one of my favorite turns of phrase in football, LSU defense played like they had their hair on fire.
Did they pin their ears back? Would you say they pinned their ears back?
They had third in California's that they forced. I think they held Georgia completely down on third down as well. They came up big in those moments. But LSU was the very, this is not controversial, clear better team in this matchup. And I like that Georgia took some shots early, and we had, you know, we had a drop to open up the game. We had a decent enough throw that was, you know, catchable out of bounds. But it was very clear once Georgia wasn't connecting with those that there wasn't a counterpunch, that there wasn't a receiver who could take over the game in the way that, you know, Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson did. And they, you know, LSU had a pretty big drop too on what looked like it was going to be like a 70-yard touchdown. But LSU, I don't know, you know, whatever it is, Joe Burrow has it.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw that play where he bought all that time in the backfield and rolled out and, you know, hit a guy downfield. And there's just something about LSU and the confidence with which they play in this offense against a Georgia defense that's incredible, but they can only do it for so long if they're going to be on the field that long because of their own offense.
Have I used the comparison before of like the end of the Matrix, the first Matrix, when Neo is fighting the agent after he becomes the one? I've used that, right?
Yes, you have.
I felt like that watching Joe Burrow because nothing at all rattled him. It didn't seem like he was at all confused or panicked or anything. He was very calm. His pocket presence was incredible. And he was delivering passes on time and at the right spot.
Yeah. And it was, what, 17-3 at halftime, and it shouldn't have even been that close. It was basically LSU from start to finish. And I tweeted this out, that the way LSU plays, where they just rip the brake out of the car and they're just constantly on the gas. We saw it at the end of the Texas game. We've seen it each week that they play, that they are trying to score touchdowns on every play. That might sound like an obvious thing. That might sound like, yes, of course we're trying to score a touchdown on every play. No, you're not. You are sometimes going into a shell. LSU doesn't have a shell. And they have been incredible to watch all year, going 13-0. They are my number one seeded team. The case isn't the strongest. You can make a pretty strong case for Clemson. You can make a pretty strong case for Ohio State as well. But with what LSU did against their opponents, against the talent level that they faced, I was not impressed by a team more than I was this season.
No, I agree.
Than I was with LSU.
So in effect, we are merging the SEC and the Big 12. As we move into bowl season, we've got LSU, Oklahoma. As we said before, LSU goosed all the way up to about a 12-point favorite. We've got Georgia and Baylor playing in the Sugar. I haven't seen that point spread yet. Maybe it'll be up by the end of the show.
Take the under.
Not a bad bet.
Georgia-Baylor, yeah.
Not a bad bet. Over in the Big Ten, so this one was on Saturday evening, and there was some doubt here. There was some doubt here about what could happen. Could Wisconsin give Ohio State a game?
Yeah.
And the answer, at least early, was yes.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State came out flat, turned it over on downs, punted, fumbled, and then scored a touchdown before halftime.
Yeah. Fumbled deep into the Wisconsin red zone. But
deep
yes.
into the Wisconsin red zone. The Buckeyes went into the locker room down 21-7, as I said before. Gus Johnson's yelling out Captain Jack for Jack Cohn.
Mm-hmm.
I still felt confident. I didn't believe what my eyes were seeing. And sure enough, Wisconsin did not score the rest of the way. Ohio State just ripped off 24 unanswered. They won by 13. They will be your number two seed in the upcoming playoff, Dan.
They will. And the way it happened, and if you're listening to this, you probably watched, but Wisconsin came out incredibly. They rushed the pass. They rushed Justin Fields. They overwhelmed the Ohio State line offensively, even when they would get behind the sticks, whether it was third and eight or something like that. All of a sudden, Jack Cohn's rushing for 12.
Yeah, Jack Cohn. Man.
Yeah, Jack Cohn was wonderful in the first half. Quintez Cephas was getting open and making plays. They were doing those short little slants against the Ohio State defense. And then Ohio State started blocking. Ohio State started dropping guys directly into those passing lanes. And the counterpunch that Wisconsin needed to have, in addition to not dropping a snapped punt and just generally going into their own shell, just wasn't there. The counterpunch didn't happen. And right. It was, what, 24-21 at a certain point? Ohio State takes the lead. And you're like, okay, this is where a championship caliber team, which is what Wisconsin showed themselves to be in the first half, makes their adjustment and regroups. And this is what Wisconsin did as soon as they went down 24-21. They punted after three plays. And then they went down 10, and they punted after three plays. And then there's still plenty of time left, and they turn it over on downs. And just, it was the separation of great from good. And that's, if there is a theme, I guess, I don't know if it's Oklahoma separating themselves from Baylor, but we saw it with Oregon and Utah. We saw it from LSU and Georgia. We definitely saw it from Clemson, Virginia. At a certain point, talent takes over.
Yeah.
And whether it was Chase Young opening things up for both himself and the defensive line of Ohio State, whether it was Chris Olave and Benjamin Victor for Ohio State, J.K. Dobbins finally got going in the second half. There needed to be, and this was something, did we talk about it with Clemson, Virginia? Like, these are the things, you know, Virginia needs all seven of these things to happen to be in this.
Sure.
Game.
Yeah, yeah.
Wisconsin needed two or three of those. They needed that scoop and score. They needed that punt return touchdown. They needed that broken play. And it didn't seem like it at 21-7, but at a certain point, talent is just going to inflict itself. And that's what happened.
It is what happened. And to your point from one of the shows we did last week, Justin Fields did seem a bit off early, and it might have been because of that knee injury. He was wearing the bulky knee brace. Wisconsin came at him. They sacked him five times on the night. But most importantly, he did regroup in the second half. Talent did prevail.
Yeah.
In this sense, he went 12 of 17 in the second half when Ohio State came charging back. Do you know what his ratios are to end the year?
No. Tell me.
He finishes the season with a 40-1 touchdown to interception ratio in his first year as a starting quarterback.
Wow, that's pretty good. I'll say it right now. I'll plant my flag. That's pretty good.
It dawned on me yesterday watching this game that both Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence are going to be in the same draft class next year.
They are.
Perhaps with Jake Fromm, if he stays, Sam Ehlinger, Jacob Eason, some others that I don't have time to mention. So, yeah, looking like a loaded class next year.
I think Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence may separate themselves from those other guys.
I would agree, but I'm just saying some big names, if you're a college football fan, that could be coming out. By the way, do we know, is Jack Cohn dead after that last hit?
I don't mean to laugh. I hope he's okay. I hope he didn't break ribs. I hope he didn't get the wind knocked out of him.
Somebody sent me a tweet with the clip saying that, yeah, you can barely see him getting up in the background, so we're confident he's still breathing. But it would have been courteous for someone to at least confirm that he's still alive, because that was a hell of a shot he took on that last play.
I saw him running towards the pylon, and it all slowed down for me once I saw the angle that Ohio State had on him, and I just let out a no as I was watching it, because man, that came right after that wild catch, right, that he sort of threw up and got them down near the goal line, and then him trying to run for a score, and it was just not going to happen. You're just like, oh god, they're going to separate his spleen from his body, aren't they? It looked like they turned his ribs into churros, and I hope that's not the case.
So we said before, Wisconsin going to the Rose Bowl, squaring off against your defending Red Box Bowl champion Oregon Ducks.
I was there the last time they played.
Correct.
It was a terrific experience. Let me know, Wisconsin fans or Oregon fans, if you need LA food recommendations. I'm always here.
And Ohio State finishes as the number two team in the country, at least according to the playoff rankings. And they're going to square off against Clemson, your ACC champion. Clemson wins 62-17 over Virginia. It is their 28th straight win, their fifth straight playoff berth. I think we expected this kind of game. I don't know if we expected it to be this ugly, but 31-7 at half, never close. Trevor Lawrence, 16 of 22, 308 and 4 touchdowns, a monster game for T. Higgins, 9 for 182 and 3 touchdowns, Dan. There was a moment early when Virginia tied it at 7 on a nice pass from Bryce Perkins. And I believe Bryce Perkins did about all in his power to try and make this one close. Clemson's just that much better. 45 points to the victor, I think, was an intentional statement by Dabo Swinney. I know he's been trying to feign some sort of like outrage about what's going on. And
they don't want us in the playoffs.
Yeah, like we're third, we're defending champions, and
we're on the Roy bus.
I get it, but they're going to give Ohio State all Ohio State can handle. Ohio State, I believe, opened as a small favorite there. The line quickly shifted in Clemson's direction. At time of recording, they might be about a 2 or 3 point favorite now.
Trevor Lawrence's numbers, I think, since Louisville, where he had the really slow start and threw a couple bad picks. Since those picks has been lights out. The way Clemson plays is that it really looks like they treat every opponent like a nameless, faceless team on the other side. There's no emotion. There's no, this almost sounds like a negative thing, but like they look so well trained and so well practiced that whether it's T. Higgins, whether it's Justin Ross, whether it's Travis Etienne, whether it's Trevor Lawrence, that whatever they're facing in practice is harder than what they're going to play in the ACC. So they're going through the motions in the most, and I mean that as a compliment, that it doesn't matter that you're trying to tackle them. It doesn't matter that you're trying to hang with them on these passing routes. They're just concerned with the ball and getting it to the end zone. And when you look at how efficiently they do it, what, they score 2 touchdowns every quarter?
Yep.
Like it's not like their offense's job is to move the ball. It's just like, okay, we need to get our 14 every quarter. That's who we are now. And they're a machine. And I think right now, Clemson's best might be better than anybody else in the country's best because of how complete they look. Now, it's an ACC schedule. The best team they played in the non-conference part of the schedule was Texas A&M. We don't know how good Clemson is when measured against the best. But, buddy, they are a machine out there.
The best tweet that I read about Clemson all day today and kind of the build-up to seeing where they would end up in the playoff matchup was from a friend, Spencer Hall. And he said that he wants to hop on the bandwagon, that Ohio State better watch themselves because Clemson's just starting to play for real. And
yeah,
we saw that last year. That was
very
much the same case last year.
Peaking at the right time, yeah.
Absolutely. So Clemson wins big. They win the ACC championship. They're going back to the playoff, as we said, for the 5th straight year. They will square off against Ohio State. They're a small favorite. That game will be out in Glendale, Arizona, at the Fiesta Bowl. The other matchup between Oklahoma and LSU is going to be played at the Peach Bowl in Atlanta.
Okay, cool. I like all these things.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
So that's where we stand in terms of Power 5 games.
Yes.
Daniel, there were a few other matchups here that I'll run through very quickly. We had in the American, Memphis winning. That was actually a really good game.
Amazing game.
Great game. Came down to the wire. Memphis won by 5. Over Cincinnati by a 29-24 score. Mike Norvell and Florida State made it Facebook official after the game. He is headed to Tallahassee to coach the Seminoles in 2020. I believe he is staying on for the bowl game against Penn State.
Yeah, I think I saw that, but I'm not positive. Antonio Gibson was terrific on the ground. Normally, we're having this conversation about Kenneth Gainwell, but I don't know if you saw that 60-plus yard touchdown run of his.
Oh, incredible.
Ridiculous. And they needed it because the passing game wasn't necessarily there all that often. I mean, DeMonte Coxey was great, but otherwise, it was a matter of, I thought the Memphis defense actually did a terrific job. As soon as Cincinnati seemed to get momentum, Desmond Ridder returns as starting quarterback, but Cincinnati would get a little bit of juice. Or goose, as you would like to say. They would goose up the scoreboard a little bit. And Memphis did a terrific job, whether it was on third downs, whether it was forcing fumbles or interceptions. It was a really nice. And if you're a Florida State fan, it's hard not to feel encouraged by what Mike Norvell has accomplished at Memphis on both sides of the ball. And really cool season for the Tigers.
So Cincinnati will be squaring off against Boston College in the Ticket Smarter Birmingham Bowl.
Okay. Cool.
Cincy against Boston College. And on the Memphis side, as we said, it's the Cotton Bowl, and they're squaring off against Penn State.
Yeah, Boston College obviously does not currently have a head coach of the future. A lot of smoke has surrounded Jeff Hafley, the secondary and associate defensive coordinator for Ohio State, who is incredibly regarded there and what he's done in his short time in Columbus. And we'll see what happens in that bowl.
In the Mountain West, it was Boise by a 31-10 final over Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Boise now squaring off against Washington in a bowl game, the Chris Peterson Bowl.
Yeah.
Sort
His final game for Washington.
Interesting plot shift in the Mitsubishi Motors Las Vegas Bowl.
Yes. I cannot recommend not playing Boise State enough in the Vegas Bowl. It's a pain in the ass. Hopefully Leighton Vander Esch does not have any younger siblings. The good news is, if you're a Boise fan, Jalen Henderson made plays for the Broncos, which was helpful because Hawaii did a nice job against George Helani and the rushing attack on the ground. But really, it was the Boise defense, the story here, holding Hawaii to 10 points. And yes, it was home. Yes, it's far away from Honolulu. But Boise, a very quiet 12-1, impressive season, finishing, I don't know, the top 15, somewhere in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, really cool to see.
Hawaii, by the way, going back to Aloha Stadium in Honolulu for the SoFi Hawaii Bowl. They play it on Christmas Eve, and BYU is going to be making the trip.
Great. Cool. I'll watch.
In the Sun Belt, we had App State going up real big, real early.
Mm-hmm.
Against Louisiana, and Louisiana came charging back. It was too little too late, but 45-38 is your final here as App State continues a really good 2019 campaign under Eli Drinkwitz.
Yes, Eli Drinkwitz, has done a terrific job with App State. In year one, they, as you mentioned, also jumped on Louisiana or Louisiana Lafayette. I always forget. The Raging Cajuns, we'll say, early, but really good job by the Raging Cajuns. Jumping back and making this a game. Levi Lewis did a good job. Always like a good lefty quarterback. And I don't know what there is to take away beyond it'd be cool if Eli Drinkwitz stayed for a while, but it doesn't seem like that is necessarily the case. He's gotten a lot of interest, and it looks like he and Mizzou may be hot and heavy. We'll see. And yeah, for year one to keep the train going for the Mountaineers, impressive.
The Mountaineers are headed to the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl to square off against the UAB Dragons.
Their mascot is a dragon, but they are the Blazers.
And on the Louisiana side, they're squaring off against Miami of Ohio in the Lending Tree Bowl.
Hmm. Okay.
Good year for them, 10-3.
Yeah, absolutely. Miami of Ohio.
Miami of Ohio wins the MAC. Yeah.
Yes, they do.
26-21 over Central Michigan, Dan.
Yeah, Jim McElwain did a terrific job bringing the chips back to this game. But yeah, Chuck Martin, your guy.
My boy.
Chuck Martin has done, I don't think they had an amazing season. They went 7-5, but they did really well in the MAC. They had I don't know who they played in the non-conference portion of their schedule. I'm bringing it up right now. Oh, they had Iowa and Cincinnati. So, and Ohio State. That's legitimate.
Yeah.
Those losses, I'm going to go out on a limb and say legit, but Miami. Really impressive season. Go to a bowl game. Win the MAC. Outstanding.
Miami goes to the bowl game. Central Michigan going to a bowl game of their own. It's the New Mexico Bowl. They are squaring off against San Diego State.
Is it Russell Athletic still? Or no, they had a whole controversy, right?
It was a whole thing.
With a potentially non-existent company sponsoring the New Mexico Bowl.
We could do that.
Right. We are definitely a non-existent company.
In Conference USA, FAU with a big, big win over UAB, 49-6. The big story here was actually that the Lane Train, Lane Kiffin, has now arrived in Oxford, Mississippi. Ole Miss making the move, bringing Lane Kiffin back to the SEC. And you know what? I was very curious. I went back and I found one of our old clips from many moons ago, where we actually fleshed out what the Lane Kiffin over-under line was for head coaching jobs in his career. The line was not 4.5. The line was 5.
Oh, okay.
So he is sitting on that number right now. And the question, which we can ask at some other point in time, is will we get to 6? I think it's possible.
If we get to 6, Do you think it means he has crashed and burned at Ole Miss or is advancing once again? So from the ashes of what happened at USC, coordinator at Alabama, and then the head job again at FAU, making his way back up, obviously Ole Miss an upgrade over FAU in terms of college football status. Which direction from here?
Man, I could go either way.
Well, there's only two.
I'm inclined to say up.
Okay.
I'm inclined
to
say... I don't feel strongly, but I think he did a pretty good job at FAU. I think he's done a pretty good job sort of, you know, rectifying his image. And he should be able to recruit at Ole Miss. We know recruiting's always been a strength of his.
Mm-hmm.
At a minimum, he'll keep things interesting. He'll talk a good
game. We know you can
game.
Recruit at Ole Miss. I don't know what exactly happens to get things done, but you know you can recruit there.
It's been done before, Dan.
Correct.
So I think he'll be all right there.
What is the upward mobility at a place that is fast and loose enough to say, yeah, we want Lane here? It's like Florida State, Miami.
And I don't even know. I guess.
Notre Dame?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
FAU again wins by a 43-point margin. A big win. I think I saw their second Conference USA title in about 3 years. They are squaring off against SMU in the Cherubundi Boca Raton Bowl.
Cherubundi. Yes. Terrific job of Conference USA play for FAU. Chris Robeson, was it Malcolm Davidson, had a nice game. BJ Emmons, obviously, people know that name. So, yeah, very, very, I mean, it's an impressive job he's done at FAU. You can't say it any way other way.
And we already mentioned UAB, the Blazers, squaring off against App State. And I believe that's it. I think I got them all. Oh, and then there's this one. Mm. The Muhlenberg Mules, baby! Woo!
Pennsylvania's one true team?
Let's not get crazy, but Eastern Pennsylvania's one true team at this rate.
Okay.
Muhlenberg wins 24-8. Over Salisbury. They are the last remaining undefeated team.
Okay.
In the Division III bracket. The next game against a team called North Central from Illinois is going to be played up the road here about 15 minutes on Saturday. I'm thinking about making the trip up.
Really?
Scotty Wood Stadium, baby. Thinking of making the trip.
Okay. Good for you.
It's on ESPN3. Make sure you watch.
Even though the Patriot League is long out of it in the FCS playoffs, James Madison stomped Monmouth. Northern Iowa close over the Jacks of South Dakota State. North Dakota State comfortably over, I believe it was Nichols.
Mm.
Austin Peay took it to Sac State. Sac State, I think, had a bye the first round, so there was an upset there. And I don't know if there's anything. Montana laid it on Southeast Louisiana. Montana State over Albany. Kennesaw State, who had themselves a year, goes down to Weber State. I don't know if that's at altitude, but I know it's in Utah. And Illinois State over Central Arkansas.
All right. Well, there you have it, Dan.
Yes. Can I ask you some questions?
Please.
Okay. First of all, 1-4, college football playoff. Are you okay with how everything was seeded and played out?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think this year, maybe more so than any other that I can remember, it seemed pretty obvious after conference championship week what the seeding was going to be. I'm totally cool with it.
Okay. Do you have specific matchups? I mean, obviously, Ohio State Clemson is going to jump out a little bit more than LSU Oklahoma at this point how Oklahoma's played some closer games and looked a little bit more vulnerable. And you said it was goosed up to like 10.5, 11 points.
Now
right?
We're at 12 now.
We're at 12 now. Can I say 12? Can I say 12.5? 13 points. 13, can we goose it to 13.5? In terms of bowl matchups outside of this, New Year's Six matchups.
Yeah.
What's tickling you?
So New Year's Six matchups, a couple here to read off. I already mentioned a couple of these, but the Rose Bowl, Wisconsin against Oregon, to me feels maybe a lot more defensive than.
Sure.
Than the last time Oregon was here.
Yeah, I don't know what the injuries were like, too. Was it Wisconsin's linebackers go down in the game? Certainly affected Wisconsin's defense. Hopefully they're back. I don't know, have their prognosis in front of me right now.
Capital One Orange Bowl is Florida against Virginia. I'm happy for Virginia being in this game. I don't particularly want to watch this game, though.
Yeah, this could be rough TV.
We mentioned Georgia Baylor could also be a very defensive-minded football game, to say the least.
Penn State Memphis?
Penn State Memphis could be interesting, actually, because one of the issues that we've seen come to light for Penn State in the last couple weeks has been their pass defense. And we know Memphis likes to air it out.
Penn State or Wisconsin in the Rose? Do you think they got that right?
I don't know. I could go either way. I heard what Rob Mullins said. I understand that they feel Wisconsin did enough in the Big Ten championship game to warrant staying in front of Penn State. I mean, they got drilled the first time they played Ohio State by 31, and they gave away a 14-point lead in the second half.
Six quarters. Went on long enough, Ty. I'm good.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I would have preferred Penn State, but...
Wisconsin has the worst loss, Wisconsin losing to Illinois, but they have probably the better wins in that they really did separate themselves from Michigan and, you know, a big Penn State loss to Minnesota. I mean, it was close, but it was a meaningful loss to Minnesota. Wisconsin left no doubt against the Gophers. So if you are placing the value of good wins over bad losses, Wisconsin seems like the choice. And I, you know, you definitely don't punish them for that third loss because they had the pleasure of going up against Ohio State again in the Big Ten championship game. So I think I'm okay with it. I think it's sort of razor thin to me.
Other questions.
Non-New Year's Six bowl games that simply jump out to you as television you'd like to watch between, what is it? When did the game start? Like December 18th or something?
The games start actually on December 20th.
Okay, so between the 20th and, I guess, the 13th being the national championship.
Sure. Well, we mentioned the Chris Peterson Bowl. Mm-hmm. Boise against Washington is intriguing just because there's that added storyline to it.
For sure.
I am interested in the Texas Bowl, Oklahoma State, Texas A&M.
Yeah, that feels like it's going to get weird, for sure.
That looks like a fun game. I'm obviously interested in the Camping World Bowl between Notre Dame and Iowa State, which figures to be a fun matchup.
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
You
haven't looked into it extensively, but as a have not looked opponent
into it extensively, feels like the kind of game that Iowa State carves up Notre Dame's secondary, and it goes the route of a shootout.
Mississippi State, Louisville. I think they always play in bowl games. How we're operating?
I feel that way.
Red Box Bowl is Cal, Illinois, and I still haven't received my hat. But a nice story because, well, I guess Cal's playing basically at home, but Illinois in a bowl game is always something that I appreciate. Virginia Tech, Kentucky, Lynn Bowden.
Ooh, good game.
Bud Foster.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech just, I think, promoted from within to replace him, their secondary coach. Justin Hamilton, I want to say his name is. Florida State, Arizona State, Herm in El Paso. Odell Haggins.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I just love the Sun Bowl in general.
The
Navy, Kansas State, and the Liberty Bowl. Does that do anything for you?
No, but Minnesota, Auburn in the Outback Bowl does.
Yes.
I'm excited about that game. And to that end, another New Year's Day game, the VRBO Citrus Bowl. Michigan, Alabama is two heavyweights. I think Alabama will kill Michigan.
Michigan, not the greatest track record under Jim Harbaugh.
No.
In bowl games.
No, but an interesting matchup on its face.
Indiana, Tennessee, the Tennessons? Can we continue it in Jacksonville?
Not bad. Tax Slayer Gator Bowl.
Yes. So yeah, there's not a ton that jump out. But
here's the way that we do this. Yeah. For new listeners, for people who have listened for a while, we run a bowl pool. It's a confidence pool, which means you pick the winner, and then you assign a certain number of confidence points from one, if you're least confident, all the way up through 40, if you're most confident. Mm-hmm. We'll talk through all of this again. You don't have to take notes, especially those of you riding in your vehicle. But we're going to go through all of these bowl games a couple shows from now and all throughout the offseason here, the early part of the offseason as we're doing coaching news and other stuff. We're going to break down all of these games to the best of our ability. It's a huge bowl pool. We'll send out the links as soon as it's available, but make sure you are ready to go and jump on in. It's a lot of fun. We're going to go through all these, though. And they're still coming out, as we said, at time of recording. I think most of them are in place now. But we're excited to talk bowl season. We also are excited to talk about bowl gifts, which I think secretly we get a little bit more excited about than the actual matchups themselves.
Memphis has named Ryan Silverfield interim head coach, which makes me think that Mike Norvell will not be coaching Memphis in the Cotton Bowl against Penn State. Almost a double letdown matchup. Penn State thinking they're going to the Rose. Memphis losing their head coach. I mentioned Eli Drinkwitz and Mizzou. Sam Pittman has emerged as a leading candidate at the time that we are recording this to take over at Arkansas, where he had a ton of success under Brett Bielema. Just if you remember November from, 2014, it can be real fun down in Fayetteville. Mike Bobo will be the new offensive coordinator at South Carolina, quote, barring a last-minute change of heart, according to the Post and Courier. I read that as, unless Georgia swoops in, I don't know. That's going to happen again, but he does have connections to both Will Muschamp and Kirby Smart. Ricky Ronnie and South Carolina defensive coordinator Travaris Robinson, excuse me, are the candidates in the mix for the Old Dominion head coaching job.
I can tell you firsthand that there are a lot of Penn State fans who are desperate for him to take this job.
James Franklin has had a pretty good track record of hiring assistants. I mean,
he's had a very good track record. No.
The Brent Pry hire seems to have been pretty good, right?
It's been very good. All I'm saying
is Joe Moorhead.
There are a lot of Penn State fans right now who are really, really burning up the phone lines trying to get ODU to hire Ricky Ronnie away.
Mike Norvell gets a 6-year deal at Florida State, which I think it's a good hire. I think it's just flat out a good hire. A weird situation at Stanford. I think like 5 or 6 dudes have entered the transfer portal in like the last 2 days.
Okay.
And that, I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but David Shaw is a leading candidate for both the Washington Redskins and Carolina Panthers job. So maybe, I don't know. I don't know. I'm reading some tea leaves here. Joe Brady said after the SEC championship game that he absolutely will be in Baton Rouge next year. So it sounds like he and the Tigers will work out a very lucrative contract.
One would obviously assume. Yeah.
Yes. FAU obviously now has an opening and they will scour, the coaching ranks to find a new head coach. Lane Kiffin, all I saw was he brought over his strength coach from FAU to Ole Miss, but apparently his staff should be gangbusters. What if he brought Sark?
Oh man, that'd be crazy.
Rutgers hired a defensive coordinator away from Temple. Greg Schiano sort of starting to fill out his staff. And Graham Harrell is a hot, hot, hot commodity with what he did for the USC passing attack.
I'm spicy!
This past year, apparently ran into Tom Herman.
Oh, it's convenient.
Recruiting.
Very convenient how that happens, right?
Yes. So there's obviously a number of dominoes yet to take place. With the coaching carousel, we will discuss any and all of these because we're going to have some time on our hands next few weeks.
We are going to make it a December to remember.
Oh.
I hope you're ready for this, Daniel.
Should also mention Jeff Tedford is expected to step down at Fresno State. That seems like a pretty good job given the talent in California and success both he and San Diego State have had on the G5 level in the Mountain West. So, and even San Jose State bouncing back this year.
Absolutely.
So I think that's everything. We've got, premier coordinator hires to be made. Mizzou, Arkansas open at the time of recording. Memphis, FAU, but Florida State hires Mike Norvell. Lane Kiffin to Ole Miss are the big, big headliners. And we'll see what happens. Still another couple jobs open for a replacement.
I have one thing to do here. I want to send a dude alert out to Destiny Alfred, who went overhand and won the Dr. Pepper tuition throw on Friday night.
So I saw this, and I got to say, she did a terrific job.
She was very, very good.
She was awesome. Now, it doesn't necessarily pay to bet on Team USA Olympic hockey every year, right?
Correct.
You're probably, if it's your own money, thinking, maybe I'm going Sweden or Canada.
Sure.
Maybe whatever the Russian grouping is calling themselves if they're not actually eligible to represent their country. It's a great story, Ty. It's a great story. Chess passers came out on top overall.
Overall, but we had that one, and that's why I send my dude alert out to Destiny Alfred.
Get that cash.
Winning it the right way, Dan. There are still some of us out there.
Ty, you've got your trio of kidlets. You would do the same thing in this position. We already talked about
it. This is
true.
This is very true. All right.
Yeah.
Any other dudes for you?
I mean, all over the place. I mean, Joe Burrow is a retired dude. He has to be at this point.
I think Jacob.
Kayvon Thibodeau. Yeah.
Yeah. Kayvon Thibodeau. Certainly Jacob Zeno.
Well, I mean, it was a very brief moment in time.
He had that moment, though. He had two moments.
It was a dude. It's like a story, like an Instagram story.
Dude adjacent.
Yeah. He's a pre-dude, right? Like, he's the quarterback of the future. That was a nice dude preview. Otherwise, I mean, in the Ohio State game, I would say J.K. Dobbins continues. Chris Olave.
K.J. Hill.
K.J. Hill. K.J. Hill, obviously. I mean, Jonathan Taylor, tailback, we've retired, but he was sensational in that first half.
We haven't mentioned T. Higgins a whole lot this year.
No, the catch he made, whew, against Virginia was something special. C.J. Verdell goes for over 200 and three touchdowns against the best, or one of the best, rush defenses in the country. Yeah, I don't know how much we have to. I think, you know, Kenneth Murray for Oklahoma,
sure,
was all over the damn place. So yeah, dudes all over the place.
Well, look, here is the deal. We've got another twos cruise coming your way. Dan and I are excited about the twos cruise this week.
Yes.
That'll be out on Tuesday at 6 a.m. There will also be a show out on Thursday.
Correct.
At 6 a.m. But after this week, we switch up the schedule a bit. There's not as much to talk about. So stay tuned. We'll talk more about what that schedule looks like. Don't worry. You'll still get us multiple times per week, at least through the end of bowl season. Thank you so much to one and all for being part of the show, for downloading, listening, subscribing. You know the drill. We will be back. Another Tuesday cruise Tuesday morning, bright and early. Congratulations to all conference champions, all bowl participants, and all members of the playoff. It's exciting.
Congrats.
We'll talk to you soon. In the meantime, for myself, Ty, for that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, talk to you all in a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.